www.themicroeffect.com.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. The envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switch and bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth, they pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night rolls in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows. Behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie.
We've got a bit of a Skype problem today because of a poor connection here in southern Arizona, but we are going to continue with this program. I think we've got a fantastic guest on today. Elizabeth Yore is she's been a previous guest, but she is a lady who has done a tremendous amount of research. She worked actually for Oprah Winfrey as her child advocate in South Africa and around the world because of all the human trafficking and child trafficking and abuse that's been going on worldwide. And she's also been really involved in following the work of Pope Francis. She's been involved with a number of different articles, and she writes for the Remnant magazine. And Liz is just a tremendous source of information on the whole issue of human trafficking and also on Pope Francis. And I'm really excited about having her on the show again. Liz, I hope you're on the call. Welcome to the program. And I would like you to maybe tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, Dan, today, and thank you for that nice introduction. Well, I am an attorney located in Chicago, the den of iniquity, where many of our problems started, beginning with Saul Alinsky, I might add, and leading up to Barack Obama. But my area of expertise is child advocacy. As an attorney, I was general counsel at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in Virginia. I handled international and domestic child abduction cases, missing children's cases, child pornography on the Internet, child exploitation on the Internet. Then I was general counsel at the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, which is the child welfare agency that every state has. And from DCFS in Illinois, I went to work for Oprah Winfrey for 6 years as her child advocate, working closely with her in the sex abuse case that unfortunately befell her school in South Africa, the Leadership Academy for Girls. And I have been in every one of these positions faced with the daunting challenge of looking at the dark side of child issues, especially things like child exploitation and human trafficking. And so to lead up to your introduction, what really captured my imagination when on March 13th, 2013, Jorge Bergoglio ascended to the loggia over St. Peter's Square as the new Pope Francis, and he talked frequently in the beginning about human trafficking. And Dan, I have to say, I was, he's talking about an issue that's very near and dear to my heart, as well as issues surrounding child exploitation and clergy abuse of children. So I was initially hoping that we would have a great ability to have some real change with this Pope. And in fact, in November of 2013, only 6 months after he became Pope, I went to the Vatican for a human trafficking conference. And there were just 80 of us from around the world. The Pope was there. I met the Pope. And I thought I was at a radical UN Sustainable Development Agenda meeting with radical Obama people there. And I could not believe that this was an event that was being handled and orchestrated in the Vatican. So from that point forward, Dan, as you mentioned, I began to dig, to investigate, to follow Pope Francis, to comment, to speak, to write, to really try and educate people what I view as a Marxist pope, a pope that is dragging us, kicking and screaming, into a new world order run by the Sustainable Development Goals articulated by the UN, which, quite frankly, he supported very vigorously. And so that's not what I anticipated to be doing for the last 6 years of his papacy, but here I am. And I thank you for this opportunity to talk about it today.
Well, Liz, I have to tell you, you have a unique insight into this Pope, but you also have a really, really broad and knowledgeable understanding of human trafficking. And I'd like to start the program by explaining exactly what human trafficking is and then why it has been growing and been much, much more a problem since, you know, in the last, say, 15 or 20 years.
Okay. Well, human trafficking is a phenomenon, as you point out so well, it has been growing exponentially. And when I was at DCFS, I was we had the first federal prosecution in Illinois involving two DCFS wards who were basically abducted and coerced into human trafficking, to my utter horror, as the agency that's in charge of DCFS wards. We are their guardians. We are their parents. And it was our responsibility to make sure that they were safe, that they were in a secure facility. And, in fact, these girls went on the run like so many do in the United States. Wards, they flee their group homes or their foster homes and then almost immediately get picked up by human traffickers. It's just the nature of the game. But human trafficking is a worldwide phenomenon. Unfortunately, we've seen it in the United States. I was involved in a number of cases overseas as well. And it is the coercion. Both there's human sex trafficking for purposes of sexual exploitation and also labor human trafficking to coerce people into slavery, into labor trafficking, pay them virtually no wages at all, but to benefit for the human trafficker himself. It is a huge, hugely lucrative operation, criminal network. In fact, ISIS has gotten into human trafficking, Dan, because unlike guns and drugs, once guns and drugs have been sold, they're gone. You have no more product to sell, unlike selling of human beings who can be sold repeatedly, day after day, several times a day. And so it is very, very lucrative. It funds violence. It funds all sorts of criminal activity. And it is upon our shores. Now, the reasons for human trafficking are varied. We have seen it as a result of the chaos on the border. Human traffickers exploit opportunities such as the invasion to the south of our border by exploiting people who are trying to cross the border and are vulnerable. And as a result, we're seeing a huge spike in human trafficking. We're seeing a huge spike in human trafficking around the world because of this interesting and terrible phenomenon in China and India of called sex selection abortion. When given the choice to have a child aborted, they abort the girls and allow the little boys to be born. And so as a result in China, because of the one-child policy, there is a huge imbalance of too many boys in the males in the society. And as a result, there's a need to traffic and exploit girls and women into China for purposes of sexual exploitation. There is also the same phenomenon going on in India, a great imbalance of more men than women. And as a result, we know when God's plan is not adhered to, that is when criminality and evil surface. And as a result, there's a huge spike in human trafficking in Asia, as well as in Europe as a result of the huge Muslim refugee resettlement migration into Europe problem. So it's, at the heart, of course, is evil, the exploit man's inhumanity to man, but there are some phenomenons that are now happening with the massive, unstructured, illegal human trafficking, migration of refugees. Those situations are fodder for human trafficking around the world, and it's in our shores, it's in the United States. And as a result, because it's covert, and because there's hidden networks, criminal networks, and because they move their victims from state to state, it's an extremely difficult criminal activity to prosecute, to investigate. And so we rely on the eyes and ears of the public to help us to get ahead of the traffickers, because they're always on the move. Their victims are controlled by poverty, by taking their identity papers, by using drugs and alcohol, by using violence to control them. So victims are not often in the position to speak up, and many don't know where to turn. So this has been an issue not just in major cities, but in rural areas, in affluent suburbs. We're seeing it more and more. So like all crimes, this is a crime that requires the commitment and eyes and ears of the public to help us solve it.
Well, that's absolutely true, Liz, and I know that President Trump has been the one who has been talking about human trafficking and about the exploitation of people and the trafficking of drugs across our southern border.
Right.
And yet the far left, including Pope Francis, have been very critical of Donald Trump for trying to close down our border to illegal immigration. He doesn't care. He understands legal immigration, and he wants to leave legal immigration on the table. But he is trying to shut down illegal immigration, and one of the reasons he's doing that, I know, is because of the human trafficking. What do you think about his position on that? Is he wrong or is he right?
President Trump is absolutely correct. We've seen a huge spike in human trafficking because of what's happening in the southern border. We've also seen a huge spike in investigations and prosecutions under the Trump administration. So he's got a two-prong attack, but as they're prosecuting and locking up the traffickers, they're pouring over the borders, and we have more and more victims. He is absolutely correct. The borders not only protect the sovereignty of the United States, they protect the vulnerable. They stop drugs from coming into our... I mean, how many... What do we have, 70,000 largely young males die in the opiate crisis because of the fentanyl and other drugs that are coming over the border? I mean, this is a humanitarian crisis. You know, and when, Dan, when the left talks about human rights and talks about, you know, the vulnerable and people just wanting a good life, precisely, there's a legal way to get have a good life. But if you don't follow the processes and the laws, what's going to happen is you're going to be end up a victim. And, you know, this is what enrages me about the Pope. Because he every chance he gets, he makes fun of and criticizes the walls, you know, the walls we're trying to build, and the people who are trying, what did he say this week? The people who are building walls, try to build walls, are only enslaving themselves. Well, that's coming from a man who lives behind a 39-foot Vatican wall that was built in the 1600s, and the reason the Vatican wall was built by the Pope was to keep out the Saracen, the Muslim invaders into Vatican City. So something's never changed, right? And Trump has a unique understanding of the nature of what is happening at the border. And, you know, he's absolutely right that human trafficking is one of the primary end results of what's going on at the border, along with drugs. Nothing good is coming over the border, and we need to intervene and to stop that, because we're, you know, human trafficking used to be one of these, you know, relatively small, unknown criminal activities that didn't impact our country like it did the rest of the world. But those days are over, and the American people recognize it. And what is especially heinous, in my opinion, is, you know, the Pope not addressing the crisis both in Europe, what's happening in countries in Europe with the refugee crisis, the massive rape culture and in violence, not only to the citizens of the countries of Europe, but the destruction of cathedrals and Christian churches and the assaults that are going on, absolute silence. And, you know, Western Christianity is under assault. It's under physical attack. And the one person who should be leading the charge to highlight that, to put pressure on the countries of Europe that are opening their borders and have caused this catastrophe, even despite the fact that the major news media in Europe, it has a blackout about what's going on. It is coming out. We now have no-go zones in Europe and in the United States, by the way. We now have, for example, in the UK, we have 85 Sharia courts. Now, I'd like to explain to your audience my own experience with Sharia courts. And that this is not... Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, please do. I would love to hear that.
Well, Sharia courts decide everything. It's a separate, parallel court. It has no connection whatsoever with the laws of, for example, the UK. It is the Sharia-dominated laws created by Sharia law, Sharia ideology. And as a result, they make decisions about land ownership, contract disputes, divorce, remarriage, child abuse, custody, not based on the laws of that country, but based on the ancient Sharia laws, which are very anti-woman, anti-gay, anti, you know, a pro-man, very unequal. Now, my own experience with Sharia law went back to the 1990s, where I was assisting American-born women whose American-born children were abducted to the Middle East by their Muslim fathers. What happened in the 1990s, during the Clinton years, is many Middle Eastern men came over to the universities here. They met American women, got married, had children. When they divorced, many children were abducted by their fathers back to the Middle East. And, you know, we tried to warn the courts of the United States, you know, take their passports. Do not allow them to have unsupervised visitation. And this is at a time, Dan, when during the course of the divorce proceeding, these men, husbands, were quitting their job, depleting all of their bank accounts, telling their wives, I'm going to leave, I'm going to take the kids, and you're never going to see them again. And so these women were going before American judges and saying, Judge, you know, I'm never going to see my children again. Oh, you know, silly, you know, paying no attention. Well, I just had him swear in court that he'll return with, this is just a visitation. He's entitled to a visitation. And they would say, Judge, he swore on the Holy Bible, which he does not believe in. He might as well put his hand to the wall for as much meaning as that has. And American judges time and time again allowed these children to be taken and never to return. And what happened is the women, the American-born women, these children were American citizens, would try to even get visitation with their children over in Syria, over in Jordan, in Saudi Arabia. They were given no rights under Sharia law. They were unable, years and years of expensive appeals, losing one right after another. That's Sharia law. I divorce you three times as the man, you're divorced. Women have no visitation rights. It's all dependent on the whim of the father. And so as a result, Dan, I learned firsthand what Sharia law meant to, you know, to these women and to these children. And these children, American-born children, are in a dark hole, never to have seen their mothers again because of Sharia law. They don't recognize international law. They don't recognize, unlike the UK would recognize a Massachusetts custody order, those countries that are dominated by Sharia law will not recognize them whatsoever. And that is the trouble of what's happening both in the United States and in the UK and in France and elsewhere, is this parallel society of Sharia courts that are these self-imposed, self-appointed courts that are making determinations, oftentimes contrary to the laws, provisions, and statutes of the very country that they live in. So when people hear about Sharia, and when people, you know, for example, if you were to be in a dispute with a Muslim and they drag you to a Sharia court, there would be, you would be at a distinct advantage, disadvantage, if you were not a Muslim who is submitting to these courts. That's the reality which is spreading like wildfire in Western Europe, which, as we know, has the Judeo-Christian natural law, civil law society, and as a result, we're not going to recognize Europe in 30 years. It will be dominated by Sharia law, and the no-go zones. And I would recommend that people would read Raheem Kassim's book on the no-go zones in Europe. He went into Sweden, went into England, went into Belgium, Molenbeek's book in Belgium, and talks about what it's like to go in as a non-Muslim into these communities. The police won't go in, the fire department won't go in, they're creating parallel societies that are highly discriminatory and isolated, segregated. There is no assimilation into the culture that they, you know, they migrated to. And so as a result, we're seeing, for example, in Sweden, women don't go out at night. Women, the one product that is being bought off the shelves in Sweden by the blonde women is dark hair dye. You know, it's a sad phenomenon. We've got to talk about it. We've got to talk about why they're not assimilating, and why they're not working, and why they are on the dole for years after years after years in Europe. I mean, Americans, is just all they have to do is look to Europe to see what's ahead of us, and the discrimination laws where you can't criticize Islam. There's a woman who has been criminally charged, Elizabeth Sabotage Wolf, in Austria. She's been going through the appeals process, and she's finally reached the last stage. She's going to be, you know, fined and probably jailed for saying that Muhammad was a pedophile and had married a 6-year-old girl. Well, that's a fact. But that's criminal. That's criminal language now. And we see it happening on social media. We see, you know, the banishment on social media, and it's coming here, and we've got to be brave and bold and courageous and fight back for freedom of speech.
Liz, I have to tell you, this is a fascinating subject, because the ones who are telling us how they love humanity and how, you know, the liberal left, how they are trying to save man from himself, and they're trying to do all these things to make our society just and sustainable, and all these stupid liberal terms that they use. And in fact, every time they get involved in a process like this, they make it more restrictive, less free, and also they bring in more and more of the criminal elements. And it's like they're trying to destroy our society, not trying to improve it.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what, you know, this is what I learned very quickly with Pope Francis. He brought in as his experts almost immediately in the beginning of his administration, in papacy, I should say, the sustainable development gurus at the UN, including Ban Ki-moon, Jeffrey Sachs, who is the favorite, you know, practically, they've knighted him practically. He's spoken 25 times at the Vatican. Pope Francis, as everyone knows, spoke to the UN and endorsed the Sustainable Development Goals, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. He was just with this Muslim interfaith dialogue meeting where he pushed the Sustainable Development Goals. And what people need to understand is all those elite globalists like Jeffrey Sachs want to tell us how to live our lives. Jeffrey Sachs, just as an example, went to Nigeria, one of the most Christian countries in Africa, if not the most Christian country in Africa, and told, I mean, here's a white man from Columbia University, you know, the head of the Earth Institute, told Nigerians you should only have 3 children. I mean, the gall. You know, the arrogance of these elitists telling us how many children we can have, how we should live our lives, you know, how much electricity we should use, how, you know, what kind of property we should have, how many cars, what kind of cars we should have. And these are the people that Pope Francis is promoting. And I have studied inside and out the Sustainable Development Goals. And, you know, I will spare your audience, you know, feel free to study them, but I'll spare them the boredom and the fury.
Liz, it sounds like we're moving to a commercial break. Please hold that thought. We'll pick it up right on the other side of the break.
Okay.
Thank you.
www.themicroeffect.com.
Well, welcome back to Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel, and today we've got a fascinating conversation going with our guest, Elizabeth Yore, who is an attorney, a human rights expert. She also writes for The Remnant, and that is a Catholic publication, and she has been to the Vatican. She has a number of times, and she has been involved worldwide in the whole issue of human trafficking. But we have the advantage with Liz that she's also a very good Christian conservative, and with that, the conversation that we're having is very open and very honest, and that's the thing that I probably appreciate most about Liz. She is a 100% concerned and genuine lady who really understands. She's been in the belly of the beast. She's watched this process work, and firsthand, she's been at the Vatican to see these things happening. Liz, welcome back to the program. I'm sorry I had to cut you off before the break. Go ahead and finish your thoughts, and then I'd like to get into a little bit of a discussion about Pope Benedict and Pope Francis and the strange circumstance that ended Benedict and brought in Francis.
Sure. Well, Dan, probably you know more about sustainable development and the Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 than anyone, so I defer to you, but what concerns me, and through my investigation and tracking of the Vatican, is this embrace of the sustainable development goals. Goal number 5 for your audience is really, you know, women, reproductive health, promotion of abortion, population control is at the heart of number 5 goal. And to me, it is shocking and a scandal of enormous proportions that Pope Francis would host people like Jeffrey Sachs. People like, you know, Dan, I don't know if you remember, but I'm old enough to remember Paul Ehrlich and his book, best-selling book, I might add, The Population Bomb, which told everybody, you know, warned, we're at the end of the world, there's too many people inhabiting the earth, we have to drastically cut the population or else we're going to explode. It was all nonsense. He made crazy predictions on which people bought wholesale. As you may recall, that I think London was going to be overcome by, you know, climate change and fall into the sea, and England was going to be no more because of the overpopulation. Utter nonsense. Paul Ehrlich has been a guest of the Pope twice at the Vatican, hosted by the Pope. Many of his, Emma Bonino, who is a former top-level Italian abortionist, Italian politician, was described by Pope Francis in glowing terms that she's one of Italy's greats. And all of these people, Dan, have been funded, acolytes of George Soros. So that when Francis became Pope, the door was open to the George Soros acolytes as well as the George Soros agenda. And people need to remember justice. I'm going to keep it simple, because every little community and hamlet in the United States has what we call a sustainable development program. And when you hear sustainable, lovely word, isn't it? We couldn't barely describe it or define it, but it's a lovely word. Well, that's intentional on the part of the elite globalists. When you hear sustainable, think socialist. Because this is about the elite telling us how to live our lives. And, you know, for generations, Dan, the elite, the climate change movement, they didn't have a moral voice. And that's what they were lacking. Leo DiCaprio wasn't going to do it. Al Gore wasn't going to do it. George Soros wasn't going to do it. And along comes Pope Francis. And it was as if they couldn't have written a better script. He has promoted climate change as an actual threat to the earth. He has, in my opinion, promoted really creation as the God, as opposed to our God and Savior Jesus Christ. And as a result, he has given, for the first time ever, a moral platform for the climate change hoax, the New Green Deal, the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And that's been very troubling, because even despite the fact that people are very skeptical about climate change, to have a, you know, a leader like Pope Francis come in and in fact, this is what, you know, to me, this was kind of pulling back the curtain and saying, oh, what a joke. He, on numerous occasions, said that there is a connection between climate change, global warming, and human trafficking. Well, Dan, that's when I knew he's using a legitimate crisis, human trafficking, in trying to bootstrap climate change, a hoax, and global warming, a hoax, to a legitimate issue. And, not, you know, human trafficking is not caused by climate change. End of story. We talked about it earlier in the show about the causes of human trafficking. But that's how desperate they are to legitimize the new sustainable development agenda. And so it's very troubling to me as a Catholic and as somebody who has studied the faith and studied what the UN is up to.
You know, Liz, you're right on with this whole observation. And the thing is, I think legitimate scientists have said that if we do actually have an increase in CO2 and some global warming, that it would actually benefit humanity, because the crops would grow better, we would have more production, would have more food, and so it's actually a positive. And these people are trying to paint the whole picture as we're destroying the environment and CO2 is a poison rather than a gas of life. So
that's
this whole
right.
thing is so bizarre, because they're using something good to try to make it look like there's bad things happening to humanity. And meanwhile, your comment about Pope Francis, I mean, he's promoting things that are totally anti-biblical. They're totally against the church, and that's the part that I really want to focus on today, because this man is not bringing us a lot of new truthful ideas and the savior of humanity that he's trying to paint himself as.
No, he's not. And I would, after we post the show, I'll post it on my website, Your Children, as soon as the link's up. And I'm going to post for your audience a number of resources that they can, you know, short little monographs where, just as you said, learn about the true story about carbon. It's the gas of life. It's what makes our trees green, folks. It's, you know, it's what beautifies our country, gives us food. Carbon is not the enemy that has been painted by the left. But we've got to educate ourselves, right, Dan? It's because we have to be armed against the big lie. and especially when the big lie is promoted by the Pope, the quote-unquote vicar of Christ. And and what, you know, what is, you know, and I was just going to briefly say, I again went to the Vatican in April of 2015 with six of the finest scientists in the world who were shocked that the Pope was taking the stance. And they were desperately trying to get the Pope to listen to the other side. I mean, after all, Dan, this is the Pope of dialogue, right? He wants to sit, he's always talking about dialogue, dialogue, dialogue. Well, he's not interested in talking to the other side. These are scientists who put men on the moon from NASA. These are scientists who teach at MIT, the most brilliant minds, who were pleading with the Pope to listen to the other side. The science is not settled. As any scientist will tell you, science is never settled. We're always inquiring and learning more and more. And but there was no interest whatsoever. In fact, they were thrown out of the Vatican press conference. They tried to ask a question. So there is no curiosity. There is strictly a leftist globalist agenda that is being pushed by the Vatican on the climate agenda. He's a political pope. There's no question about it. And he has embraced the political agenda. I mean, what other pope would get involved in the middle of a campaign and call, you know, Donald Trump unchristian because he wants to build the wall? He wants to protect the sovereignty of our country, the most pro-life president we've ever had. So, you know, I think to me, and I think most Americans can see through that insertion of leftist politics by the Pope into our political sphere. But we have to push back, and we have to reclaim the faith. And but I, you know, you raise a very interesting point about how did we get here with Pope Francis? How do we find ourselves with Pope Francis?
Right. I'd love to have you kind of to tell our listener, first of all, go back to the papacy of Pope Benedict, who happened to be very conservative, very pro-life, very outspoken in protecting a lot of the Catholic, let's say, canons that, you know, really outlined what Catholicism is all about. And how he just mysteriously resigned, and then we've got this new pope who happened to come from the Jesuits, who, quite frankly, he's the first Jesuit pope, but the Jesuits until the 1870s were kind of looked on by the Catholic Church as being the thugs, the enforcers. They were not what was considered the core of the true believers, and all of a sudden, well, it's happened over 150 years. They've cleaned up the image of the Jesuits. But bottom line, this is the first Jesuit pope, and when that happened, I thought, something is going on here. Do our listeners a huge favor by kind of outlining how that whole process happened.
Sure, I'd be happy to. My own experience in clergy abuse cases was contrary to the mainstream media. When Cardinal Ratzinger, who was head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, he was in charge of investigating clergy abuse scandals. And he was, he's obviously a brilliant man, open to listening, really recognized because he listened to the American bishops and the Americans about the scandal in the United States. He did more in his time in that position than anybody has. He defrocked over 400 priests for clergy abuse scandal when he was there. Doesn't get any credit for that, but that is in fact what he did. And when he became Pope in 2005, you know, following the popular John Paul II, number two in the conclave election was Jorge Bergoglio, who, you know, to all of us, we were shocked who's Jorge Bergoglio from Argentina, who's not a name on anybody's list. And frankly, Dan, Ratzinger was the nightmare of the globalists and of Angela Merkel and of George Soros, because he was, first of all, he took the name of Benedict because Benedict was the saint who spent his life re-Christianizing Europe. And that was what Benedict Ratzinger wanted to do. He wanted to focus again on the Christian roots of Europe and to bring the faith back to the Western continent of Europe. And so as a result of knowing now what we know of the agenda of the elites, this was a nightmare. They did not want to. Europe had been largely de-Christianized during the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, 90s. And here was this brilliant man who grew up in Nazi Germany, who understands totalitarianism, wanting to bring the church back to its roots. And that was a big problem. As well as in 2006, I believe, was his famous Regensburg lecture, which he was roundly criticized, but he talked about what we all know of Islam being the violent, conquering religion that it was. And he was quoting from a historical perspective, and as a result, all hell broke loose. And he was really vilified in the international press because he told the truth about Islam. And so that was number two strike against him. Now we know they wanted to de-Christianize Europe, the elites, the European Union, the UN, and Soros, and they wanted to flood and invade Europe with Muslim refugees. So here they have as the the obstacle, this new Pope Benedict. Also, it should be noted, and I've studied these proceedings at the UN, Dan, the Catholic Church under John Paul II and Benedict battled the UN tooth and nail in Rio, in Beijing, fighting their abortion-laden UN agenda. And the Sustainable Development Goals, the Millennial Development Goals. And Benedict was very smart and savvy about what the agenda of the UN was. And his people, his representatives dug their heels in. They had several victories against the UN's elite abortion agenda. And so for any number of reasons, plus he was also the bitter enemy of Angela Merkel, and we know what Angela Merkel had in store for Germany, because Germany had been de-Christianized. Their population was dropping dramatically. There was a demographic crisis in Germany. They needed more people to support the German economy. So Benedict was enemy number one. And they had to figure out a way. They were either going to wait him out, maybe he would die in office, or what I think happened, we know that what we now know is a group of liberal modernist cardinals called the St. Gallen Mafia. They called themselves the St. Gallen Mafia. They met every year from 1996, claiming up to, I think, 2006, to choose Jorge Bergoglio to be Pope. Well, they failed in 2005. But nevertheless, I believe that they continued to plot the overthrow of Benedict. And when it became very clear, after I think it was 6 years, that Benedict was not going to die in office, they needed to get, the Sustainable Development Goals needed to be renewed in the UN. Soros wanted this refugee resettlement issue to blanket Europe. And all those, the climate change agenda and the taxing of countries by the European Union and the carbon tax. All these issues were understood by this brilliant, humble Pope. And he was not afraid to speak out, but he was this huge obstacle, this little tiny Vatican State. But the Pope Benedict had a big voice, a big platform, and they needed to get some, this is my take on it, they needed to get somebody in there who was going to push forward the agenda of the New World Order. And they needed somebody who was going to work with them, who was going to provide that moral voice that they so desperately needed, and that somebody who would be able to minimize and neutralize the doctrines of the Catholic faith and the Catholic religion and Christianity, not criticize Islam, so that they could move forward with their one world religion. Well, to our utter horror, in, I think it was February 11th, 2013, Benedict announced his resignation and left office in 2 weeks later, and Jorge Bergoglio was installed and immediately began his, what I call his UN agenda, not the Catholic agenda, but his UN agenda. So what we don't know is what specifically was the pressure that was put on Benedict to step down. We hadn't had a Pope step down, I think, in 400, 600 years, so it was a shocking development. I think we're going to find out what exactly happened. We know that the conclave, the proceedings to elect Jorge Bergoglio to become Pope Francis, were in many respects violated of a lot of the processes and canon law that were set down. For example, no lobbying, no prejudging who should get it, no assent before the actual election that they would take the job. So there were all sorts of canon law violations up to during the election. What is especially troubling, though, is that we have not truly uncovered how they got rid of Benedict. That will come out, I'm convinced, because people know, into what exactly was done behind the scenes to elect Pope Francis. But this is who we have right now, and we can talk further about the specific steps that he's taking to carry out the agenda of the New World Order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Liz, I tell you, you are absolutely brilliant. I don't mean to embarrass you by saying that, but you are absolutely brilliant because you have connected the dots in an area that I think a lot of people are terrified in attacking or in being honest and open about, because it is at the heart of the Catholic Church. And the truth is the truth. But very few people would have your ability to expose it, and certainly your brilliant understanding of what globalism is all about. I really applaud that. I want you to talk briefly, and we're going to be heading into a break here shortly, but I want you to talk briefly about Pope Francis's background when he was a cardinal and when he was in Argentina, and some of the programs that he did there, because he was very openly Marxist when he was in Argentina. A little bit about that, and then we'll pick up the rest of that conversation on the other side of the break.
Okay. Yes, he was, as you said, a Jesuit. He was the first Jesuit provincial at the young age of 35 in Buenos Aires. He was on a fast track. He has been implicated, and there's, you can find this on the internet, you know, lots of documentation. He has been implicated in working with the military junta who overthrew Juan Perón. And even though Pope Francis Bergoglio was a big Peronist, He worked with the military junta. In the military junta, you may recall, some 30,000 people went missing. Now we know were killed by this violent junta that took over this country, this largely Catholic country. And there were many indications and allegations that Pope Francis, Cardinal Bergoglio, was involved with ratting out certain priests who were then arrested by the junta. Pope Francis would say, well, I was opposed to liberation theology, but he's the kind of guy, as I have studied him over the years, in his younger years, he was what we consider a conservative Jesuit. He was very tyrannical. He was basically dethroned in the Jesuits and sent out to pasture at a very young age because of his, I think, personality and personal problems, whatever they may be. And so as a result, he's the kind of guy who's this chameleon who would go with the wind. If it was popular to be conservative, he'd be conservative. If not, then he would join the other side. And he became ultimately what I would call a radical Olinsky community organizer, the cardinal of the poor. And we can talk about that afterwards.
This is The Micro Effect. www.themicroeffect.com.
Look beyond the shadows. Behold a pale horse ride.
Well, welcome back to Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel, and today we've got a fascinating discussion going on with a brilliant lady who is really on top of the understanding about the new Pope. Yeah, well, he's not new anymore, but Pope Francis. And we were having a great discussion before the break. Liz, I lost my Skype connection, so I didn't get a chance to hear where you ended with that, but you were talking about how Pope Francis was a bit of a chameleon and how he really was kind of the Pope that was supporting the military junta that was going on in Argentina and some of the other things. And he's been pretty Marxist his entire career, because he's always railed against capitalism. He's always railed against things that most of us would consider, at least as Americans, would consider freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom to the ability to take care of ourselves and our families. Let's go ahead. Please pick it up where you left off. I'm sorry you got interrupted.
No, that's quite all right. No, that's a great summary, Dan. You captured it well. He also, interestingly enough, when Pope Benedict gave his speech on Islam, at Regensburg, Francis criticized it a great deal down in Argentina. But other than that, he's been behind the scenes until he was elected Pope. He has not been one who hangs around the Vatican. He reinvented himself, in my opinion, as the Cardinal of the Poor, would go down to the barrios and meet with the people and ride the subway. And he was also, and this I think is something that is of course very instructive today in what we're going through, he was one of the big promoters of the interfaith dialogue down in Argentina. And you know, there's a big Jewish population in Argentina. Many fled from Germany. German population, Muslim population, and he was really promoted these interfaith dialogues. And what we've grown to understand about the interfaith dialogue, which was frankly created by the Muslim Brotherhood, the violent organization, terrorist organization, that feeds Islamic violence, is that they use the interfaith dialogue as a way to bring in together all these various organizations and churches. And the purpose is to minimize, neutralize the tenets, the differences. It is to promote and infiltrate these organizations, which the Muslim Brotherhood and the Council on American Activities Care did. And it's ultimately about taking over these organizations. You know, the New World Order, one of their tenets, as you know, Dan, because you've studied this yourself, is one world religion. And the Muslims believe that this is the time of civilization jihad. And of course, the one world religion is not Christianity, it's Islam. And so one of the ways, in a huge step in getting there, is to co-opt the other religions. And I might say the other religions are happily being co-opted. In fact, Francis just came back from both Morocco and Abu Dhabi at two interfaith dialogue meetings. And in the Abu Dhabi meeting, and this is to the point of really carrying on his work from Argentina, in the Abu Dhabi meeting, he signed a document, a declaration, that said that God wills all religions. Well, you know, I'll tell you, the Catholic faith, there's a lot of pushback saying, well, wait a minute. God does not will Islam. God does not will all the Buddhism. God may permit those religions, but it's Christianity. That's why his son came down and died for our sins. And, you know, so there is this concerted effort on his part to elevate the interfaith dialogue above and beyond the tenets and magisterium and teaching of Jesus Christ. This has been repeated throughout his papacy. And what's really troubling is that he, what did he say just last week? He said that Islam is a beautiful flower that is going to bloom. And he has been largely silent about the violence, just the brutal Islamic violence in Nigeria, in Iraq, and all over the Middle East. And what did the Pope say? If I talk about Islamic violence, I must talk about Catholic violence. And well, that tells you just about all you need to know about Pope Francis, because Pope Francis has really begun this effort to, you know, frankly, elevate the interfaith dialogue in Islam. There's an interesting article by William Kilpatrick who said, and this is what he argues, and I think this is important for Christians to realize, that deadly anti-Christian attacks have become commonplace in the Muslim world. Catholics need to know about them, and they also need to know the why of these attacks. There will be no end to the bloodshed unless we understand why it's happening. And both the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, they've absolved Islam of these crimes committed in the name of Islam, and they keep saying repeatedly, as does the Pope, terrorism has nothing to do with Islam. Well, tell that to Boko Haram, which is an Islamic organization, and ISIS, which is an Islamic organization, and their goal is to convert or kill the infidel. And so it is extremely difficult when we have the head of the Catholic Church who says, in this past week, Dan, he said to Catholics, conversion is not your mission. Can you imagine? Conversion is not your mission. So he's become not only climate change is the best ally and the New World Order's best ally, but he's also become Islam's best promoter. I mean, they must imams must be sitting back and laughing, thinking about not only the Pope, but also the bishops, primarily the U.S. bishops, who get, you know, about 40% of their funding in federal grants to resettle refugees from Muslim countries into the United States. And so is it, you know, is this about follow the money, Dan? Yes, I think partly it is. But I also think that this, to your point, his roots in Argentina are bearing very destructive fruit now. He is destroying and minimizing doctrine. He is elevating dialogue. He is in denial about Islamic violence. And he is elevating the earth as God in the climate change movement. It's the Gaia movement. We know about the Gaia movement, that, you know, the creator is God. Not God the creator, but the earth itself. And so we've got our work cut out for us. And, you know, as much as Catholics, you know, we're never supposed to criticize popes or bishops or priests, it's Katie bar the door. And now we know we must reclaim the faith, reclaim the doctrine, restore the sacred, and really drive out the evil and filth that is in our church from the very top to the very bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to say, Liz, there's a fairly significant, I won't say it's a huge percentage, but there's a significant group of folks who think that maybe Pope Francis might be the Antichrist because of all the changes that have happened in the church and how, I guess, anti-biblical, that's the only way you can really describe it. He does things and says things that are absolutely against the basic canons of the Catholic faith.
I mean, I say he has the theological heft of a Deepak Chopra or a Dr. Phil, you know. What to me is becoming very clear, Dan, is that as Catholics and Christians, we are, you know, preordained to have been born and live through this tumultuous time. And I believe that we're going to be judged on how do we fight for the church, fight for Jesus Christ, fight for our Judeo-Christian civilization. And, you know, Bill Kilpatrick, who I referenced earlier, said that Europeans were unprepared for the cultural aspect of the Muslim invasion. They naively assumed that Muslims would assimilate to Western values. Well, heads up, Americans. Just take one look across the pond and know what this is, what's coming here, unless we reclaim our faith. And we now know, Dan, that it's not going to be easy. This culture is, you know, all the media is against us. All the universities, all the big corporations, all the major foundations, the entire school system, the deep state. Those are our opponents, right? And it's a daunting task. And they're moving, in my opinion, when you look at, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Omar, when you look at all the others, Nancy Pelosi and others, they're moving at lightning speed. What's up is down. What's black is now white. And in many respects, you know, it's what our eyes see, we must deny. They will not allow us to hear the truth. And you know, this really is a battle for the truth. What is actually happening on the border? It's a crisis. It's an invasion. It's bad for the individuals who are crossing the border illegally. And, you know, this is, as a lawyer, I have to say this, and we don't have this discussion much. There is a great benefit in laws and procedures and provisions, whether they're in the church, whether they're in the local municipalities or national law, to follow the law brings peace, it brings order, it brings stability, and it brings success and truth. And by not following the laws, by flaunting the laws, whether it's in the papal conclave, or throwing the book, you know, or not upholding INS laws, those things tend to break down law and order in a civilized society. And I think that's what we're seeing. And because the people coming across the border, because the people who are being resettled by all the various volunteer organizations, the Catholic and Baptist and Lutherans, all the social service organizations, because unlike previous immigrants, they refuse to assimilate. They don't view the Bible that they swear their oath of allegiance to the United States as a valid swearing, as a vow to take before God and our nation. And as a result, we've got a big problem. And we have to wake up to that, and we have to have a serious discussion. Do we want people in the United States who refuse to assimilate and obey our laws? For example, I've been very involved in End FGM Today, where little girls are being subjected to female genital mutilation because 98% of the girls in Somalia are. And so they come to the United States and they continue these horrendous practices, even if it's a crime in a considered child abuse in the United States. It's like, wake up. You need to obey the laws of this country. And if you don't, you will be prosecuted. You may or should be deported. And, you know, we can't even have that frank discussion about obeying our laws. It's almost a basic tenet as a citizen. Are you going to obey our laws or aren't you? If you're not, then you don't belong in this country. And the values of this country are, you know, God, family, protecting children, not abusing children, not abusing women and gays. And, you know, those values are not values that are being imported into the United States these days. And so, and at the same time, we are having blasphemy laws imposed upon us so that we cannot have a discussion. So our voices are being denied to us at a time when we need our voice. And because, you know, if we're not discussing the truth, the reality of what our eyes see, then we're going to suffer the consequences. And there's still time to have a debate on the reality and the truth of what's happening in Europe. It's obviously the Catholic Church, its leadership is not going to lead that fight. It's going to have to be the laity. And it's, you know, this isn't a time when Christians need to be alerted to the dangers posed by the spread of Islam. And why are the bishops throwing themselves into, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood manufactured meme of Islamophobia and calling out anybody who criticizes Islam, criticizes Sharia as an Islamophobe? And is the bishop's embrace of Islam as a religion of peace a byproduct of the billions of dollars that they receive from our federal government to resettle Muslims into the United States? You know, and we as Americans need to, while we still have the internet, we still can pursue these issues, we need to educate ourselves. You know, the daily slaughter of Nigerian Christians is getting virtually no attention in the media, Dan. And yet, I mean, and not to equate the two, I mean, hundreds and hundreds, and the slaughter of Christians is just, it's a genocide of the worst sort in Nigeria. They want to wipe out Christian Nigeria. And it's all being done by Boko Haram, that's Islamic and in the name of Islam, enforcing the infidels to convert, and if they don't convert, they'll be killed. And yet, for weeks on end, we hear the drumbeat of one crazy nut in New Zealand who killed 50 people in a month, terrible as it is. But they're not equivalent, and we need to have a discussion of why Iraq and Syria and Nigeria and all over the Middle East, Christians are being slaughtered. And it's always been the responsibility of the hierarchy to sound the alarm against Christian violence. And it's happening in France. We had a 85-year-old priest who was nearly beheaded by two Islamists in the south of France. And, you know, that, and the Pope has been largely silent. And that, to me, very troubling, but I think there's a political agenda at work, and to raise Islamic violence interferes with his narrative of an interfaith dialogue that is elevated above all tenets of Christianity. And that's what we're facing.
Oh, I agree, Liz. And the thing, we have a program last week with Brent Allen Winters, because we were talking about how natural law or common law is really the foundation for the United States Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. It's based on a understanding of how important law and the laws under a constitutional republic protect the individual. They don't protect a collective. They protect the rights of the individual. That guarantees that minorities are protected equally to the majority. And so that, you know, that whole system is being broken down right in front of our very eyes. And you're absolutely right. I think this Pope and the New World Order are at the heart of that, because they recognize that if they destroy our fundamental guidelines in this country, and certainly the Ten Commandments are at the heart of that, you will destroy society, and then they could remold it into the Marxist socialist mess that they see as nirvana.
That's right. And I was just going to say, Dan, when you're talking, it sounds utopian. If you read the Sustainable Development Goals, right, eliminate poverty, eliminate ignorance, education for all, health care for all, prosperity for all. And I want to alert your audience that when you hear there's two words that, in my opinion, are real buzzwords, and that's why your ears should perk up when they talk about common good, common ground, and shared values, shared this, shared that. It's the collectivism. It's the communist collectivism is what they're talking about. And they're building this one world order, talking about peace on earth. But it is the tyrants who are going to tell us how to live our lives. And this peace on earth is under one God, one peace, one fraternity. Everything's equal. Everything is merciful. We're all the same, except for the fact, of course, that the Muslims do not believe in any of this. They believe in the destruction of America. They're in the midst of a civilization jihad. They believe in the one world religion is their religion, and anybody who doesn't submit to it, submits, is going to be killed and slaughtered. Look at the Middle East. It sounds wonderful, just like sustainable sounds. Who could be against sustainable? Well, are you against sustainable? If sustainable means you will be told what kind of car to drive, how many children to have, how much electricity that you can use, what kinds of food you can eat. I mean, what you know, what kind of school you can be go to, what kind of career you can have. That's sustainable. And so it's that allure of heaven on earth. And we as Christians know that this is a veil of tears in many respects. We struggle in this world to gain eternal salvation with our Savior Jesus Christ. That is our utopia. That is our goal in life. Not here. We strive to be the best people we can be, raising our family in the family unit that Jesus Christ imagined as one man and one woman, a father and a mother, welcoming children into this world. That is as close as we are going to get to heaven on earth. And in the end, if we have led a valued, important, good, holy, kind life, we will be reunited in eternity with God. And so the elitists try to impose utopia here on earth. But what they're really imposing is tyranny. That's the dirty little secret when you pull back the curtain. And you outlined that beautifully in Agenda 21 about the you're not going to be able to own your house and your property, and you're going to be told what you can farm, how you can live. That is the quote unquote reality of the utopia that they're trying to sell us. Now, on the other hand, and you know this, Dan, because we've seen it time and time again. How do they get a freedom-loving people to that point? They try and scare the bejesus out of them. The world is coming to an end. Climate change is, you know, AOC, what did she say? The world's going to end in 12 years because of climate change. We're at the tipping point, says Jeff Sachs, the Vatican expert. The world is going to implode because of climate change, because of too many people. Panic, panic, panic. That's their tactic. And then they say, but we the elite and the globalists and the UN have this magnificent utopian plan called Agenda 2030, called the Sustainable Development Goals. If you only listen to us, you stupid peons, we will tell you how to have utopia on earth. That's what's going on. And until you pull back what their arguments are and study deep into the weeds of what the UN has been doing since the 1920s, and how God bless Pope Benedict and John Paul and those people who battled the UN, because they recognized what was going on in those days, and what the hidden agenda is. But if, you know, people got to wake up, and now we're at the point where we're going to have to fight to reclaim our freedom and keep what freedoms we do have, because this ball is rolling downhill. They have momentum, and the culture has lost God. It has successfully been de-Christianized, but we can reclaim it. And we have to re-Christianize. We have to restore Christ in our schools, in our churches, in our communities. And then and only then will we be able to battle what I consider the evil socialism, the evil of the New World Order. It's coming, folks. And it's going to look pretty, but inside the package that they present to you is nothing but slavery.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right, Liz. We've got a break coming up. Let's pick this up on the other side, because this is a fascinating, fascinating discussion.
Serving the planet, The Micro Effect. www.themicroeffect.com.
Today, our guest on the radio show is Elizabeth Yore. Liz is she's an attorney. She is a human rights advocate. She's worked with Oprah Winfrey and her group to assure that they fight against human trafficking and against child abuse and pornography and a lot of these issues. And as a result of that, Liz has been a guest frequently of the Vatican, and she is really someone who fully understands how important it is that we continue our efforts to try to strengthen the church. And in the process, she's seen Pope Francis, who is, I refer to him as the red and green pope, as someone who is really opposed to the basic canons of the traditional Catholic Church. And so what we're talking about today is how those have impacted us, how those changes are part of the new world order, the new globalist sustainable development. The whole thing is all about creating a world that is socialist, it is Marxist, and it is very definitely controlled, and it is going to control the population. And Liz, thank you. You're brilliant in your observations about all this stuff. You mentioned Paul earlier, and that was required reading when I was going to college in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also John Holdren, who was President Obama's science czar, was also one of those people that were predicting the end of the world either by climate change or overpopulation. And in fact, they've been proven dismally wrong by actual facts, but that hasn't slowed them down at all, has it?
No, it hasn't. When I went in 2015 to protest at the Vatican over the climate change encyclical, I thought Paul Ehrlich had died by that time, you know, and so I said, you know, these guys who are here were mentored by Paul Ehrlich, you know, for all I know, you know, this Vatican, if they could, they'd invite Paul Ehrlich. I mean, of course, you know, never thinking that a few months later, Paul Ehrlich shows up at the invitation of the Vatican. Paul Ehrlich comes back another time. I mean, this guy is a total, his predictions, right? Dan, you know, they all were fraud. It was just pulled out of thin air. In fact, one of his compatriots and colleagues has spoken many times at the Vatican, and he wrote the population bomb along with Ehrlich. And people've got to read that. I mean, just open up to any page, and you'll see this just horrendous scare tactics and intimidation. This guy still teaches or still on the faculty at Stanford. Anybody else who had made such predictions that fell flat would be thrown out of academia, but because he has the right leftist agenda, he is allowed to continue. So he's still alive, he's still kicking, and he's still spreading his what I call his untruths and really vile predictions. And so, you know, when at a time, Dan, when the world needs a strong moral voice, with everything that's happening, the secularization of the culture, with the civilization jihad by the Islamists, with all the things that are happening, we land with this pope, who is really an eco neo-Marxist globalist who pushes the New World Order agenda and with climate change and migration, the last two things that we need. And at a time when the moral voice of the church is completely silenced because of the clergy abuse scandal, you know, if the devil is really having its way with these institutions that were supposed to protect us and get us into heaven. And, you know, in Francis, when he was Bergoglio down in Argentina, never met once with victims of clergy abuse, despite the fact that they pleaded with him and wrote to him. He ignored them all. In fact, there's a wonderful woman by the name of Beatrice Varela, whose son was abused by a priest. And she kept knocking on Bergoglio's door down in Argentina. And finally she gave up. But now she said, no, he wouldn't meet with the victims, the poor victims of clergy abuse. But he opens wide the door to the globalists like Leo DiCaprio and to Hollywood and to the celebrities. But to the little people who he says he cares about, no. He refused to meet with them. And frankly, his behavior with the clergy abuse scandal has, in many respects, delegitimized him as a moral voice. So that, I guess I would have to say, a positive, although we're not able to clean up, you know, the church with him in the seat of Peter. But it points to the fact that, you know, if you truly are a holy man, if you truly are worried about the vulnerable, then the first thing you would do in the church would be to clean out the, what we now know was the communist influence of homosexuals into the church in 1929 by Bella Dodd, the head of the Communist Party in the United States, who in 1929 was ordered by Moscow to infiltrate the Catholic Church in the United States and put in 1,100 seminarians who were communist homosexuals. And many of those young men that went into the seminary at the behest of Bella Dodd and the Communist Party became cardinals. And this was not done just in the United States Catholic Church. It was done all over the world. And so really, you know, what we are, we're bearing the fruits, unfortunately, of an effort by the Communist Party, the red, you know, the red-green axis, as we call it, to infiltrate the Catholic Church, to destroy the Church from within, because in many respects, the Catholic Church has been that obstacle over the decades to communism and into Nazism. And so, to be able to infiltrate it, to destroy the moral force and the moral fiber of the men in the church, it's been a very successful project by the communists, and we know that because of people like Cardinal Ted McCarrick, who is probably the premier, most prominent sexual predator cardinal in the church. He was the spiritual advisor, Dan, to the deep state, to the Nancy Pelosi's, to the Joe Biden's, to the Kennedy's, to the Patrick Leahy's, to the Dick Durbin's, to the Bill Clinton's, to Barack Obama. And frankly, he was the appointed diplomat in waiting for Pope Benedict, Francis, who sent him to China, to the communists, to begin negotiating the horrendous deal that Pope Francis has signed with the communist church, with the communist government, destroying the Catholic Church, the underground church in China. So it's all coming home to roost, as they say. The communists working their magic, you know, they view the long view, right? They can wait decades to have their machinations come to fruition. And we've seen the collaboration of the bishops with the deep state Democratic Party, how they have been co-opted by the Democratic Party. And we've seen how Pope Francis has been co-opted by the globalists, probably very willingly. Probably we will someday find out, maybe not in our lifetimes, but learn that he was their choice and they made sure that he was placed in the seat of St. Peter. They have, for generations and decades, probably millennial, have been trying to impose on the Vicar of Christ, the modernist pope, the radical pope, the Marxist pope, the communist pope. And it's certainly by all the signs, Dan, in my opinion, they've been extremely successful in getting a pope right now in Pope Francis to do their bidding on every single imaginary and every single detail that has been the agenda of the left. He's going to continue, and we're going to have to fight back and pressure him and pressure the bishops and our in the local level and the state level, the national level and internationally to stop this infiltration, co-opting of the church by the globalists. I never in a million years would think I'd be talking about this, be seeing it firsthand, and trying to urge Christians to take up, you know, spiritual arms and verbal arms to fight this hideous usurpation of our freedom and of our culture and civilization. But I'm afraid we are at war. The signs are all there. And so the sooner we educate ourselves about who the enemy is, I think the better.
No, I agree. I agree. And, you know, you mentioned how the homosexual agenda has been really promoted under this pope, even though, you know, there will be people who will argue with us about that. But he's been painfully silent on the issue when it deals with the cardinals and the people that are within the church, and it's always been that way. He has always been protective of his fellow priests who, as you say, were part of a whole program to communize the papacy, to communize the Catholic Church. And that's a fascinating piece of history. I wish you'd tell our listeners a little bit more about that, because I'm amazed that you have such a good understanding of how they did that, how they literally brought communism into the church by bringing young communists into the priesthood. That's a fascinating story.
It really is. I mean, the Bella Dodd, a woman who was born in Italy but of American, Italian descent, but her parents were American, and she became fascinated with communism, left the faith, and became a real operative in the United States. And, you know, what people need to understand is that it did not stop. Communism did not stop from the infiltration of government after the McCarthy hearings. There are generations and generations of communists here in the United States. After all, we had, as our CIA director, a Catholic who converted to Islam, whose first vote was for the Communist Party member. That was John Brennan. I mean, and to think that somebody like John Brennan became CIA director with the access to the most sensitive information, high security clearances that anybody in the United States has in the world, it's just unimaginable. And when you think about it, just think about what a masterful tactic this was. By infiltrating the Catholic Church with active homosexuals in the clergy who preyed on children, number one, it sent millions of people fleeing from the church. They left the church. It bankrupted the church. It delegitimized the moral voice of the church. It has left the remaining members without priests. There is no trust in the church. Now, only the devil and the communists could come up with a strategy that would have all those various results. And it, you know, it happened slowly over time. But here we are with a church devastated by the clergy abuse scandal, infiltrated, you know, as Archbishop Vigano, the one and only whistleblower in the entire Catholic Church, who blew the whistle last August and said there is a homosexual current involved and in place in the Vatican. They are surrounding Pope Francis. He is protecting them. And he named names. And then, you know, Vigano also said that the Pope should step down because of this infiltration of homosexuals that have been elevated and given important jobs in this Vatican. And, you know, it's a head-scratcher. And as a result, Archbishop Vigano, who's an retired Italian bishop, who was the nuncio, the ambassador to the United States. So he saw everything. He saw everything that was going on with McCarrick in the Vatican, here in the United States. He's in hiding, which goes to tell you the danger that he's in with the Vatican for speaking the truth. And, you know, that's a very sobering reality that we have to face. But now we know the truth. Now we know what went on, what's going on in the Vatican. He called out the Pope and all his papal cabinet. And so as a result, I think it's really, and I continue to say this, is that educating yourself with the truth, about all these complex kind of things that are in motion. There's a lot of wheels in motion. The UN, the climate change, the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. Learn about Bella Dodd and her influence. Read a book called The Disinformation, about what the Soviet government are masters at disinformation, and how the lamestream media has been able to be a tool of all these evil forces in not only suppressing the truth, but also projecting the lies, as we know. We just saw that in the Mueller investigation. And so it's really up to us as individuals to discern the truth and then to take action. Because we are all called upon to play a role as citizens, both, you know, in this country, as citizens in our church, and to figure out what is the best role for me to play. Certainly educate your children, because they're getting disinformation and propaganda in the schools. Certainly educate your fellow parishioners, your friends, your prayer groups, your relatives, and to continue to, you know, frankly, turn off the TV and start learning about all these things. I mentioned earlier in the program, Dan, that, you know, I've just learned all this by deciding I was going to educate myself. And sadly, with all the education that I had, I never learned any of this. So, we do know, don't we, Dan, that life is a life learning experience. We have to continue to learn well into adulthood. And so, as a result, I have on my website, Your Children, that's Y-O-R-E, Children, right after we post this show, all the resources, DVDs, books, YouTube channels, little pamphlets, just gems of information. I would encourage everybody to get as educated as Dan is on all of these things. I know, Dan, you've posted some amazing things about the UN, about the Sustainable Development Goals. All that information is just a treasure trove to overcome the lies from the media, the lies from the elites and the UN. And just, it's not complicated, but it's It's what Dan does every day. It's connecting the dots. And once you connect the dots, you see with new eyes. You hear things, oh, I know what he's up to. I know what that agenda is. It becomes like you understand the language, the lingo, the arguments that they try and use. And you know how to cut, just like the balloon. You know how to pop the balloon. They throw out these leftist bromides. But it takes, you know, I would say just it takes a daily commitment. And you don't have to go to back to school. It's not going to cost any money, but it just costs, you know, that ability to say, my job is to pursue the truth. And if I pursue the truth, then I will be free. And, you know, I say, get down on your knees and then roll up your sleeves and get to work. And before you know it, Dan, we know this. Before you know it, people are going to be connecting the dots. They won't be deluded or lied to anymore. And they will have the courage and the confidence to push back on the lies that are being told to us by the media. You know, one thing, Donald Trump has taught us all to fight. He knows the enemy, doesn't he? He knows you've got to be really tough. And you have to persevere. And you cannot back down. And Americans love a fighter. And that's why they voted him. And they love a fighter who's a patriot, even better. And that's what he is. He loves our country. But he needs troops. And I think, Dan, that's your show, is building the troop deployment, right? And continuing to send people out into the vineyards, into the battlefields to spread the word. Our president can't do it alone. And these are tough times. And I know he feels the wind behind his back, the prayers of the faithful, the support of the faithful, but it's going to get a lot tougher, and we're going to have to arm ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely, Liz. You know, we have a responsibility as citizens. We have a responsibility as parents and grandparents to stand up and protect those who we brought into the world, to stand up and protect those who can't protect themselves. We have a responsibility, as you say, to be the fighters, and we need to educate. I'll use a saying my good friend Debbie Boscalupi, who had a radio show on this network, said, educate, communicate, but for God's sake, don't hibernate. That's absolutely what we need to do. So it sounds like we're running out of time here, but Liz, thank you again for being such a tremendous guest. And we will have this show posted on my danhappel.com archive website within about 48 hours. So thank you, and please spread the word, people. This lady is absolutely right. We need to save this country, and it's up to us to do it. Thank you for connecting the dots with us, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you.